get the meeting, call the meeting to order. Today is Monday, September 18, 2017, and this is a meeting of the Carson City Advisory Board to Manage Wildlife. Tamara, would you please call roll?
Jefferson Beamer?
Present.
Vice Chair Martin?
Present.
Member Green?
Present.
Member Yannick?
Here.
O'Gorman's present.
Thank you, Tamara. And was the meeting properly noticed and posted for the record?
Yes, it was, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'd like to ask if everybody would oblige us in standing and removing your any hats and joining me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Carson City Advisory Board to Manage Wildlife. It should be noted that the board reserves the right to limit the amount of time that will be allowed for each individual to speak and may place reasonable restrictions on the manner of public comment. The board is precluded from acting on items raised during public comment that are not on the agenda. Public comment pursuant to this item should be limited to items listed on the agenda. Do we have any public comment at this time?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'll do it.
Okay. Wow, it's all so fast.
Sure.
Mr. Bailey.
Ah, yes.
State your name for the record. That'd be great.
I'm Kevin Bailey, Carson City. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair, and Advisory Board members. Just want to inform all that Bailey Fishing Pond, as many of the other urban-type fisheries, are going to be stocked this week. They're going to start, according to Nevada Department of Wildlife. That's kind of an important item. There's a lot of people chomping at the bit. And I don't see in the agenda that there's anything that has to do with the road or Hobart Reservoir, so any information that would be forthcoming that this honorable body would understand or had heard of, I would be most interested in. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey. Is there a question?
Yes, sir. I don't know. There's always been some sort of algae. I haven't been there recently. There has been quite a bit of algae. I think when we put a bunch of fish in it, there's going to be a lot of hooks that are going to be dragging a lot of that stuff out. So I haven't gotten in with my waders and a hose, so I can't really tell you. It was getting pretty thick.
Good deal. Thank you. Any other further public comment? Seeing none, we'll continue on with the agenda. Agenda item number 4 is a possible action item. Action on approval of minutes from the August 7th, 2017 minutes. I'll call for a motion. A motion by Mr. Green, seconded by Mr. Yannick. Any discussion? Any question? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 And then agenda item number 5 is the adoption of our agenda. I would like to call for a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Yannick, seconded by Mr. Green. Any discussion? Any question? Seeing none, call for a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Item number 6 is an informational item on disclosures. Any member of the advisory board may inform the chair of his intent to make a disclosure of a conflict of interest on an agendized item or relative to advisory board business. Disclosures of conflicts of interest must also be made at the time a specific agenda item is introduced. Do we have any Anybody wishing to express any disclosures? Seeing none, we'll move on to agenda item number 7, which is an informational item, which is our regular update and activity report on the Carson City Urban Wildlife Committee. Mr. Martin, do you have anything on that?
There's no additional activity since the last board meeting in Carson City. I did, however, get a request from Corey Lytle, who's the chairman of the Lincoln County Wildlife Advisory Board, and he asked for links and copies of information that we've put out. He said that in the last several months, the increase in deer sightings in Pioche, Panaca, Caliente, Eagle Valley has been increasing significantly, and there's a lot of public interest in that. So I find that really encouraging. So I did send him links to all of ours and copies, but what I really appreciate is that other CABs are now seeing the necessity to educate the public.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Any other further items under urban wildlife at all? Also bring up, I would just state that
we had an Eagle Scout do an Eagle Scout project where he did some wood deck boxes, and so we were able to place some wood duck boxes along the Carson River, which is pretty neat. We actually saw a number of birds, which surprised me. It was pretty great, and we had a whole bunch of people from the community show up to participate in that, as well as they did a community cleanup. And while we were over there in the Riverview Park area, we counted 21 coyotes in the middle of the day over there. Yeah. I was pretty surprised at that. So it was a great opportunity to educate the public on what our board does and some other opportunities to volunteer through Nevada Department of Wildlife and others. So great opportunity. The Eagle Scout did a great job. I think they placed 21 wood duck boxes. So kind of neat. All right. Any public comment at this time? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to agenda item number 8, which is a possible action item. This is the Carson City Advisory Board to Manage Wildlife Consent Agenda Items. And you'll notice that there's quite a few consent agenda items. There's A through J. And I will just state this about our consent agenda for those that have not attended. The items agendized from 8A through 8J are consent agenda items. They are considered routine and may be acted upon by the Advisory Board to Manage Wildlife with one action and without extensive hearing, although a member of the Advisory Board may request an item be pulled for separate discussion and action. The Advisory Board Chair retains discretion in deciding whether or not to pull an item from the consent agenda. There will be no public comment unless an item is pulled for separate discussion and action. And so with that, I will just say that I have invited Mr. Mark Enders and Mr. Dave Catalano is with him as well from Nevada Department of Wildlife. So I would like to pull agenda item 8I from the agenda. Is there anybody else that would like to pull an item?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to pull 8A.
Any others? Any others?
No.
Okay. So seeing none, we will go ahead and pull agenda item number 8A. We'll start with that, and then we'll move right to 8I. And I believe Mr. Enders has a presentation that he would like to, that I've asked, requested that he provide to the board as well as the public on to help us understand reptiles in Nevada a little bit better and kind of where the department's going with that. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to make a motion that this board, I'd like to make a motion that this board supports all items on the consent calendars with the exceptions of item 8A and 8I, which will be heard, which we will be doing further, whatever.
Okay.
So I'd like to make a motion to approve all items except 8A and 8I.
A second.
Okay. Motion made by Mr. Martin, seconded by Mr. Yannick. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. So that brings us to, a motion carries unanimously. That brings us to agenda item number 8A, and I'll turn the time over to you, Mr. Yannick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason I pulled 8A is at the last commission meeting, there was quite a bit of talk about this. And I think my feeling is that it's vague. I mean, it depends on the day the warden or representative from the department actually visits the property to determine what the incentive tag quantity is going to be. Because there could be days when there would be 100 animals on the property, and there could be days when there's 25 animals on the property. It's kind of, you know, it could be advantageous to the landowner, or it could be disadvantageous to the landowner, and he's kind of stuck. So I think we need to maybe ask that the department, you know, use other means of, you know, of let the landowner provide evidence of the number, the average number, or the number, the maximum number he's seen, so that he gets a fair shake with regard to the amount of damage that the errant animals do by going onto the guy's property. The second part, which I was more concerned about, was when some of the commissioners revealed that they had purchased landowner tags for fees ranging from $4,000 to $6,000 to $8,000 and up. That's a lot of money. I was concerned about it because I asked the department, do you issue a 1099 or some form to the Internal Revenue Service that you've given these tags to somebody? These tags have value. Anywhere from, you know, a minimal amount to a high maximum amount. And I think this whole process needs to be examined and dealt with so that, you know, if people are going to sell the tags to pay back for their damage, that's what they're intended to do. Or if the landowner wants to just keep them, and that's his prerogative. But when I started hearing numbers like what was tossed around at the meeting, that adds up to an awful lot of money. And in some cases, it maybe doesn't totally compensate the landowner, and in cases, it can overcompensate the landowner. So I'm just trying to play fair with the landowner, first of all, that he has a way to represent the number of animals that have been eating his crops or damaging his crops, and that he reports his income appropriately from the sale. Thank you.
Mr. Green?
Yeah, that bothered me a lot too, but I also have concerns about whether or not we should be in the taxing business. Landowners very often don't receive, they're not the ones getting the high dollar for the tag. They've sold them to us, to somebody else, and the landowners then are forced into a situation where not only they show the value of the tag, but then they've got to come up with a loss statement to go along with it, which is just another bureaucratic nightmare. Because there's huge amounts of land, and the deer can do, you know, if you lose 10% of your crop because of the deer, and the prices vary from month to month, it could become a bureaucratic mess.
In response, I agree. And that's why I think it needs to be looked at. I mean, it may have been easy to control or run or be fair to everybody for a lot of years, but just some of the items that you brought up and that I brought up, are, there was no answers when I brought that up at the commission meeting. You know, everybody kind of says, you know, yeah, it's an it's something. And I'm not looking to make the department, you know, part of the, you know, the Internal Revenue Service at all. But I think that in cases where a landowner has significant damage, the tags that he is able to sell may not totally compensate him, and he's entitled to the additional loss. I don't want any landowner, because, you know, we haven't been able to control the size of the herds or for whatever reasons, you know, because we have agreements with a lot of landowners about, you know, elk and how much we're going to keep the level at a certain number, and sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. So I just want to try to find some system that works out so it's fair to both the landowner and the department and everybody who plays in this game. And that's why I just asked the department take a look at this and review, is this, you know, adequately compensating him, and is it fair to all those involved?
Further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just point out that before us today is the policy regarding the arbitration process for applicants dissatisfied with the elk incentive tag awards, and it's not dealing with the actual elk incentive tag award process. This is just arbitration. If, as Mr. Yannick pointed out in the beginning, well, the biologist may come out and say, no, you don't get three tags, you get one because I only saw X number. That's what the process is. This is the arbitration if the landowner does not agree with the number given to him. So this is really not the process on how it is determined how many tags that are given to that landowner. And this is not dealing with what a landowner can do with those tags. So whether he sells them, gives them to friends, or uses them personally, this is not that. This is just dealing with the arbitration. And I personally don't have any problem with the way the process is written, where it specifically says that they, the department shall have a committee consisting of a commission and or county advisory board members to serve on the arbitration panel to help determine and help resolve the conflict. So I appreciate everything you said, but I don't think that this is actually the policy that you can, I think you're actually talking about the process itself on how they get those tags and what they do with them rather than the arbitration.
If you read the minutes of the meeting of the commission, that's true. They talked about the arbitration process, but it evolved and included all the other issues that I brought up. And that's the only reason I brought it up here, because I agree with you. You know, it's an involved situation. And the arbitration process as to settle, you know, is it 10 or is it 14, is key and primarily the interest of the landowner. And you're right, that's what the arbitration process is about. But it included all of the above when they had the discussion at the commission meeting. That's the only reason I brought this up here.
Well, I appreciate that. And I like the fact that there's more to it behind this, and that the reason they have an arbitration panel is because of the potential for disagreement between the landowner and the biologist. And, you know, if you have a problem with the action that we have before us is just whether or not we support the arbitration policy. I personally support the arbitration policy, and I don't see why we need to have anything other than a positive support of this policy with the commission. So with that, I would like to move that we support the policy, and that we support item 8A, and that we support the policy as written.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Martin and a second by Mr. Yannick. Any further discussion? So the one thing I will want to point out, I appreciate that, Mr. Martin, is that, you know, we have to stay within the scope of the agenda item, of course, and I do appreciate your comments as far as your concerns and stuff, because I had the same concerns the month prior to that when we talked about it as well. So, so with that, we will open this up for public comment. Any public comment at this time?
Question. For the record, C.K. Bailey, on this one point, in other words, 8A only or 8?
8A.
8A only, thank you.
Any further public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All those in favor of Mr. Martin's motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. All right. That brings us to agenda item number 8I, which is a possible action item. This is the agenda item that the commission has on the commercial collection of reptiles. This is a draft, just kind of by way of just information. If you remember right, the last commission meeting, there was a lot of discussion that went on about whether or not the department's recommendation to create regulations that regulate the commercial collection and commercial selling of reptiles across the state, that we should enact that, right? And I think it was pretty much overwhelmingly agreed by the commission, and certainly by this board, I think, as well, that that the commercial collection and commercial sales, there should be regulation always when it involves anything of a natural resource, right? And I think that the commission charged the department with coming back with a proposal, right, of the two options that was in that plan, right? That there was four options, and I think option number 2 and 4. Do I got that right, Mark?
I forget the number. Sorry.
Anyway,
I forget the numbers, but it was the regulation to prohibit, and then the regulation to limit based on seasons and areas and things
correct.
Like that.
Correct, and to establish seasons, to that's establish correct. Regulations, closed species, the whole shoot match, right? So those were the two items that the commission had asked to be brought back to at this meeting coming up this weekend. And that's what I really wanted to talk about. So I've invited Mr. Enders and Mr. Catalano to be here to help educate us as a board, educate the public. And really, what I really want to hear is what the department's from a biological standpoint, from a feasibility standpoint, what is your guys' take on this? What would you guys like to see based on the data that you have been able to collect? Because I know there was some controversy there that, you know, some of the folks that spoke up in opposition of this, right, at the meeting, claims that you guys never asked for data. Well, I don't think they understand that the data that they're submitting, you do utilize that, right? I have confirmed that. And you do have been able to establish some really good parameters that I don't think the public understands, right? I don't think this board understands that as well. So I've just asked that you give us a presentation to help educate us on wildlife, maybe some of the wildlife that's in our own backyard here that we may not know about, and then give your thoughts on how you feel like the recommendation we should we should make and the reasons for that, as well as what, from a biological standpoint, what your opinion is. Yep, make sure you press the button and say your name for the record, please.
Okay, I'm Mark Enders, and I'm a biologist with Nevada Department of Wildlife in the Wildlife Diversity Division. And would it be all right if I dim the front lights for the slides, or is that not usually possible?
Oh, yeah, it's for it.
There we go.
That may help the viewers a little bit, but so I appreciate the invitation to come and give this presentation today. I think, you know, this is a very important item on the docket this week at the commission meeting, and so anything that we can do as a department to help everybody understand exactly what's going on, it is a great opportunity for us. And so I'll just dive right in. I put this talk together today, so it was a little short notice, but I want to do my best to give an overview of reptiles in Nevada and commercial collection, and then the different regulation options that are going to be in front of the commission this week. And so I'll start off by highlighting exactly why Nevada is so great. And one of the reasons, there are many reasons, of course, but you know, we're here in a state that covers three different desert biomes. And so we have the majority of the northern part of the state is in the Great Basin. The southern part covers part of the Mojave, and then we even have some Snake River drainage up in the north end. But what that really does is create a lot of reptile diversity in this state that other states don't necessarily see. And so the map on the left there is kind of like a heat map. So the warmer colors, like red, indicate a larger number of reptile species. That's the number that's given there in the legend. But you can see southern Nevada is expected. It's a hot desert, and so you're going to end up with a little bit more reptile diversity because they do a little better in hot climates than they do in the cold north. But even in northern Nevada, we have pretty good reptile diversity. And so to put a number on it, there are 53 native reptile species in Nevada. And half of those actually, due to a number of reasons, are considered species of conservation priority. And that can be either because they're rare in number, they're hard to study sometimes, habitat loss and fragmentation, especially in southern Nevada with all the development that's gone there over the last decades. You know, so any number of those reasons could result in a species becoming part of that list of those that are under conservation priority. But I'll also highlight that Nevada has, among all 50 states, the seventh most lizard species, which is pretty significant, and also the 23rd most snake species. And so we're talking about a state that has really good reptile diversity. And right here in our own backyard in Carson City, we have 24 reptile species, many of which you'll never see because many of them are really, really secretive. But we have some that are actually state protected, like the Sierra alligator lizard, and then others that are pretty common, like western fence lizards. But across the, you know, we're here in the smallest county and smallest jurisdiction in the entire state, and even we have 24 species of reptiles here. And I'll show you some maps that sort of show commercial collection in this area in a minute. But you know, I just wanted to highlight species diversity in the state. And a lot of what contributes to that is the fact that some reptiles in the West have really limited ranges. So if you take a look at some of those maps that are on the edges of this image, take the desert horned lizard on the very right-hand side, for example. That's its range in the entire world. And you can see Nevada takes up over half of that. So there are others like the western banded gecko that has a really limited range, and southern Nevada covers multiple subspecies even. So, you know, we're here in a state that it just happens to be centered in the desert west, and that's where we see a lot of really good reptile diversity. But it's also important to note that when you look at this group of states in the western U.S., we also have the lowest amount of regulation when it comes to commercial collection of those reptiles. So the states that you see pictured in red have the greatest, and that generally means means that they've banned it altogether. Idaho is moderately high because there is one individual who's grandfathered in on his private land to collect reptiles. But other than that, Nevada is really the only state that's allowing commercial collection to persist the way it does. And that's actually written into our laws. And so the NRS states that the department can permit commercial taking of unprotected wildlife in any manner that's approved by the commission. And there's a price that's to be paid for that wildlife. So anybody seeking a permit to commercially collect reptiles pays $250 per year. And then whatever they collect can be sold. And that's written into the law. And then NACs also state that it's important to note that those permits are really only supposed to be issued if it's proved to the department that the collecting will not be detrimental to the wildlife. And such a permit can be canceled by the department for a violation of its conditions or if it's found to be detrimental to the wildlife. So I think that's really important to note that those stipulations are actually written in the state law. And apologize, that slide is not working like I thought it would. So just a brief history on commercial collection. In 1986, just over 30 years ago, is when it was made legal to commercially collect reptiles in this state. There was a bit of back and forth in the late 80s and early 90s that involved a temporary ban and then a Supreme Court ruling and a district court ruling also that tried to put a temporary stay on that, and it was reversed. And so since 1999, the last time the commission reviewed it and elected to make no changes, this is the first time we've had an opportunity to revisit this issue. So, almost 20 years. And there are some stipulations that come with the permit. You have to be a Nevada resident. 10% of the species reptiles in Nevada are actually protected by state law. So that leaves only 90% available to collection. You can collect in unlimited numbers all across the state. You're allowed to sell, barter, and trade. You must hand catch. You're not allowed to use passive devices on the landscape to trap animals. You have to be there on site and capture them. And then you have to keep records and submit those to the department. And so that's actually the major source of our data. It's a self-reporting system, and when you're talking about literally hundreds of thousands of data points, that is the major source, self-reporting. And, you know, across the state, we have a number of wildlife projects that are going on. Right here in the Carson River watershed, for the last 2 years, I've been conducting a Western Pond Turtle Study where we've looked at population demographics and movement in this watershed. We've got a Gila Monster project down south where we're studying home range size and survivability of Gila monsters, which is actually one of Nevada's protected species. We have dozens of volunteers across the state who survey for reptiles just on their own free time, and they contribute a lot to the state. And so we do have means of doing research and collecting data, but there's nothing that can really match 450,000 data points that these commercial collectors provide to us by telling us where they are, where they're catching things. And so this graph here on the lower part of this slide, over the last 30 years, this is the number of reptiles that have been captured by commercial collectors, just about 450,000, a little bit less than that. But that comes out to about 17,000 reptiles per year that are being captured and presumably leaving the state. But either way, they're being sold for profit. And it's also important to note on this pie chart right here that 78% of the reptiles that have been caught during that time period are considered species of conservation priority by our agency. And then we also see some hot spots, and I apologize that this map here is not going to show up very well at all for you, but the California-Nevada state line is right here. And so Carson City is right here, and then Las Vegas is down here. And so, we have these red areas that are considered the highest collection areas for commercial collectors, naturally, like I said, due to greater diversity down in southern Nevada, areas around Beatty right here are among the largest hotspots. Also Las Vegas and down near Laughlin, we have really big hotspots. But, you know, that's not to say that right here in western Nevada, even, that we don't have some. Right here, just south of Fallon and just to the east of Fallon, we have really, really large collection areas that are hit repeatedly year after year after year. And so what that really results in is a large number of species, like I mentioned. So Chuck Wallace, that's one of everybody's favorites. I know one of those made an appearance at a commission meeting, but there was one day that was reported 92 of them were captured and removed. 92, I don't know how you do that, but that's a lot in one day. And all told, over 30 years, we're looking at 16,000 of those. Desert horned lizards, everybody loves a spiny-toed lizard, right? But 105,000 of those, the most of all, have been removed. Once there was over 600 in one day. They were captured and then subsequently sold. And so that's 30 years worth of data, and a 450,000 point data set is like a biologist's dream, really. I mean, that's a great, great large data set. And when you zoom in here in our own backyard, and again, on a short notice making these maps, I didn't do a particularly great job, but here's the California-Nevada state line, which, you know, puts us right around here. And you can see that right here in Carson City, commercial collection is pretty limited. But a lot of that has to do with the environment. You know, a lot of Carson City is actually in the Carson Range. And so there is significantly less commercial collection that's occurring there because reptile diversity in the Carson Range is much, much lower due to just the conifer forest environment. So you really have to get out into the deserts, especially these salt desert scrub valleys and areas right around Fallon, like I was mentioning, to the east of Fallon, and even between Reno and Fallon, we have a lot of areas of really high, high concentration of commercial collection. And this is 30 years of collecting, but you can see that they really do repeatedly trap the same areas over and over. You end up with these really, really dense clusters. And then a couple of examples that I can give you. This is one collector's log that was submitted. It was over 40 pages. And it had 2,000 reptiles collected per month and over 24 days of working per month. That ended up being about 83 reptiles a day that were collected. And I want to point out the most important thing here, I feel like, is this graph right here, which I'll have to explain. But these are months of the year. This is March, April, May, June, July, August, etc. And the largest numbers are collected right during the breeding season for this one 40-plus page log. And so I think it's pretty clear that heavily collecting a species, no matter what it is, right during its breeding season is going to have impacts. And we have seen that in the data. And I'll give you a species-specific example. This is the Chuck Walla. Like I mentioned, 92 left the landscape in one day at one point, but almost 16,000 have been collected. And what makes that number seem even bigger than it is just how slow these individuals recover from any kind of impacts to their population. And a lot of that has to do with really low reproductive rates. And I don't think that's something that most people understand. But, you know, this is a species that can live 15 years, and it really doesn't even start reproducing until it reaches 3 years of age, and doesn't even necessarily reproduce every year. You know, they live in a very harsh environment, and reptiles are very well suited to just not reproducing in a year if it's really a bad year. And we've had plenty of those drought years lately, too. So you can kind of get an idea that if a species only reproduces you know, every couple of years, then that species is not going to recover from population impacts quite as quickly. And that's also evident in the data here, too. This is data starting in 2003 to last year, and basically what it shows is in years above the red line, a higher number of Chuck Wallas was collected, and anything below the red line indicates basically a below average year. And so any year where a lot of chuck koalas were collected, we saw a crash the following year. And that's pretty consistent. And one, yeah.
I mean, that looks like a big lizard. I mean, that's how big do those things get?
It is. So, you know, I couldn't tell you by poundage, but I would say if I could show you in my arms here, they get to be about this big.
Wow.
So they are really, really large. And for that reason, they're highly sought after, too, yeah. And they do fetch a fair price. So.
I want to stop you real quick here. Do you have any, can you give us any, like, what's, have you seen what these things go for, like, cost-wise? I mean, what are people paying for this species, for example?
Yeah, I think I would be likely to misspeak if I said something off the top of my head, but...
Well, give us a range that's broad. I mean...
Yeah, so...
We're not talking about a couple of dollars, sure, I can
sure.
imagine, right?
No. So I would say most lizard species, based on what I've seen, which is really, you know, Google searches and looking at these online places where Germans and other Europeans go to buy this stuff, mm-hmm. I would say that most lizard species could easily fetch in the hundreds. Something like this that's larger, longer lived, I think four digits wouldn't be out of the question.
Okay.
And I do know, you know, there are some species like the Gila monster, which is prohibited to collect because that is a protected species. On the black market, those will easily fetch $3,000, something like that. And so I can certainly provide better data than that.
I just want an idea for myself. So.
Yeah, and you know, I know that Jason, our herpetologist, has done a lot of research into that, trying to figure out just how much these things fetch and just how much money has been made by this effort. And I couldn't quote those numbers myself, but we have looked at that, certainly. And then again here...
May I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Are our collectors...
Sure.
Yes, are our collectors actually selling overseas, or are they just selling to exporters? Or a little of both?
Do you know?
No.
So do you mean, are they going through an export company to then
yes.
get them overseas?
Yes, another legal company that would export them to Germany or European countries or Japan or wherever they might be wanted to.
Right, yeah, I understand the question. So unfortunately, my expertise is limited enough that I can't answer that question.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
So real quick, and I apologize. I should have been a little bit more mindful of this. We have another meeting starting at 5:30.
Sure.
I can get to the
meat of it.
No, you continue on. But I think what we'll do is we'll hold questions till the very end. I've been writing some down as well. But
okay, that works. I'll definitely try to scoot along here. So what this shows here is that we have, again, this is the breeding season. March, April, May for this species, and that's when the most numbers are being collected. So that's just what that shows right there. And then I mentioned the spiny lizard earlier, desert horned lizard, as it's actually called. And again, I'll just quickly highlight that a year following large numbers of collections, we often have multiple years of decline numbers. And then on top of legal collections, we also have found, along with other land management agencies in the state, a number of illegal collection traps. I know that some of you have been in the field and have seen these pitfall traps, and I'm sure you've even seen the data here, but we have over 700 of these in southern Nevada. We have some in northern Nevada as well, and among those that have been checked by NDAO, 64% of them had reptiles in them, even though they were claimed to only be used for scorpions. And out of those reptiles, half of them were actually dead, so 47% to be exact. But, so just another source of mortality that these species really can't deal with. And so that brings the question, what are the real impacts? So first and foremost, commercial collection targets and depletes populations of long-lived and reproductively limited species. So that's some of what I've already highlighted here. Collections are allowed during the breeding season right now, which really slows down recovery of these species after significant population crashes. And then it's an additive source of mortality. You know, I mentioned before, we have habitat loss, urbanization, invasive species, disease, et cetera. And really, this is just one more source of mortality, especially when you count those pitfall traps. And then it's a little bit of a backward system, too, because the market demand for some of these species is actually what's driving collections, rather than our management goals or the science. And I think it's pretty clear, too, that this system does not follow the North American model. You know, we are trusted as a wildlife agency to manage Nevada's wildlife as a public trust resource. And the Roosevelt Doctrine itself calls for science-based policies that ensure the sustainability and wise use of wildlife resources. And I think the connection here is kind of lacking between the North American model and the commercial collection of reptiles. And so I'll get back to, you know, here we're in this great state in Nevada, great reptile diversity, and now the commission has an opportunity to make a decision this week, or I guess, it'll take a couple more meetings beyond that, but I just wanted to highlight for you exactly what's coming before the commission. And those are two regulations that have been drafted by my agency. And the first of those options is a commission general regulation to prohibit commercial collection of reptiles, period. And that could be a permanent or a temporary prohibition, but either way, it would prohibit all collection. Number two is a commission regulation to limit commercial collection of reptiles. And then I'll quickly just explain both of these options as they're written and as they'll be presented to the commission. So option number one would prohibit collection. A permanent prohibition would require a change in species. So that would require additional steps. A temporary ban would not require that. Of course, it would just be temporary, though. Now, this regulation does provide the strongest conservation of native reptiles and allows for the best recovery potential for declining populations. And it would also be cost-effective for us as an agency, and it would be enforceable, and it would bring us into consistency with our neighboring states. Option number two, the commission regulation to limit commercial collection of reptiles, would actually limit based on season, area, species, and it would still allow for take of reptiles for commercial purposes. So it would provide less of an opportunity for those native species to recover from population declines. And it would also be difficult to enforce. And I think one of the major issues that was explained to me today is that we also don't really have a good funding mechanism for this type of system right now. The Wildlife Diversity Division gets federal dollars from state wildlife grants to do sensitive species work, but that money is not enough to cover the staff time and resources that would be required to administer this particular system, and so sportsmen's dollars would actually need to be used. PR dollars are also not allowed to be used on reptiles, so it would have to come from license and tag sales. And then just to kind of highlight, this is the end of the presentation here. And so I wanted to highlight some of the aspects of this in a little more detail. So we would recommend under this proposed regulation that no collection be allowed during the breeding season. That's going to give these populations the best chance to recover. Methods would stay the same, only by hand, noose, snake hook. No pitfall traps or prying apart rocks or anything like that would be allowed. Those are already prohibited. And then we would also propose changing which areas of the state are open to collection. And that's based on which areas have been hardest hit over the last 30 years. And so just to illustrate that on this map, we would recommend closing the game management areas that are listed there, which would look like the map to the right, and would allow those hotspot areas a chance to recover.
So just for clarification, the black is the closed area?
That's correct. Sorry for not clarifying. The black areas would be closed to commercial collection. And if we were to go back and look at that hotspot map, it mirrors that quite a bit. And then a fourth aspect of this would be quotas. And so a lot of information here that you can't read because it's too small, but it basically would put annual and daily limits on all species that are collected for commercial purposes. More or less 30 to 50 per lizard, 10 per snake, and 5 for venomous snakes, and that's for an annual quota. And then finally, we would have recommendations for species restrictions, and we would want to close commercial collection for all species that we consider to be of conservation priority, which includes the chuckwalla, the spined desert horned lizard, which you saw. And that's what I have for you, so I'd be certainly happy to take however many questions we have time for.
Mark, could you turn on the light behind you, please?
All right, so questions.
Well, I have about 5. First of all, I watched with interest the video and the read the minutes from the last meeting, and there was one gentleman who lives in Pahrump, I believe, who makes his livelihood basically collecting and selling reptiles. Obviously, what you're proposing in either method, either a ban or those limits that you had there, would basically impact his business significantly. Any action that the commission is going to take and any recommendations any county advisory board makes needs to be cognizant of the fact that there is at least one person who makes a annual livelihood out of this. Question is, do you know of others, how many collectors actually are at the commercial basis? Do you know how many collectors are at the commercial basis where it is a significant portion of their annual income?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, we don't.
There was 8 licensed collectors in the state.
Right. It's a very low number of collectors. And in fact, I think there's a family relationship between many of them as well. And so I unfortunately don't have information here today that would shed any light on what percentage of their personal income is based on commercial collection.
Right. So basically what we're doing is we're proposing a regulation that will basically impact 8 people at this particular juncture.
If there are 8 permitted people, then that would be the case. And I guess, you know, there's certainly a fine line to walk between affecting somebody's livelihood and preserving wildlife resources, and it's certainly unfortunate that we're in a position like that.
I totally understand that, and I'm very cognizant.
Yeah,
of
we
that.
Are too. We don't take it lightly, certainly.
Right. Second question is: you started out this whole thing that we are of all the states in the West where reptiles are basically, we are the lowest regulatory state. You didn't give any examples, but can you think of some examples or give me some ideas of what some of the high regulation states are? You know, I looked at the map in California, Arizona, Utah, Oregon, the ones that surround us, with the exception of Idaho, are what you classify as high regulation.
Right.
So maybe you could just go in that, go around the horn and you know, give me an examples of their high regulations.
Right, so I guess the far end of the spectrum would be the states of Oregon and Arizona, which do not allow commercial collection of reptiles, period. And there's no commercial collection of reptiles allowed whatsoever. And it's interesting that Oregon took that stance too, because if you recall the map, they were not in a very species-rich area for reptiles. Arizona is highly, highly species rich, and they actually have banned it completely.
So is California.
Well, and so Idaho is the only state in that circle around Nevada that does allow commercial collection, but it's been explained to me, it's this map here in the lower left,
it's been explained to me that what keeps them from being a complete ban in the state of Idaho is a grandfathered permit for a private landowner.
That's just a signal?
That's my understanding.
So, getting back to the other states, what does California do?
So, do you mind if I grab my computer? And if it makes more sense to do this here as we can. Too.
He said previously that it's only banned in Arizona and Oregon.
Yeah, it's true. So, all of the surrounding states have a complete ban.
So everybody in red?
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And so okay. What I wanted right. to do... So
what your definition of high regulatory is a complete commercial ban?
Is a complete thank, commercial
thank
ban.
Thank you. They'll take
okay.
care of that.
Okay. Right. Sorry, I was misunderstanding
a little bit. That's okay. You just said high level of regulation. So high level of regulation means commercial ban. Okay.
That's right.
Thank
yeah.
you.
And I think the stats nationwide, which is what I was going to pull up, I think it's... Something like there, you know, when you start counting states that are not in this little corner of the West, there are other states that do allow commercial collection, and I have a document here that highlights
that,
exactly.
That's okay. I'm just looking for our shared sure. species that sure. that you have on that map.
And I know that some letters are forthcoming too that are going to be sent.
So now I'm going to get into biology yeah. and the impacts. So we're surrounded by five states that are banning collection. You had a slide up there showing that there's a 20% annual recruitment of at least that one species you
that
had
was
up there.
The chuckwalla. Yeah.
Yeah, and I assume that other species are similar to 20%. So with that said, is there some level of sustainability of collection, because I know you have predation, you have mortality, you have accidental mortality, you have basically, you have three ways that you can die. You either die of old age, you're eaten by someone else, or you're run over. And now we also have collection in our state. So we have four ways you can die in our state. In the other states, it's three. So where I'm going with this is there population data on the other states showing species or overall reptile numbers versus our numbers? Are our reptiles in peril? Are there specific areas where we have them? I was looking at your populations up and down, and what I saw in there, though, is you do have recovery. And so you see where I'm going with this.
I do.
And I'll let you I'll
sure.
let you go. Here.
Sure. And it's also important to remember, I didn't necessarily explain the axes behind this chart here, but this is not like zero or anything. You know, this is all basically calculated in a log form that corrects for a lot of other differences out there. And so I think you are seeing rebounds here. There's no doubt about that. But I think what we've also started to undertake are analyses that correct for the amount of effort that's being put in by commercial collectors. And I think there were some comments last time that suggested that they're just not out there as much, and that's why the capture numbers have been declining. But what we've actually begun to do is start to work with some statisticians who can actually take all of this data and start to account for some of those nuances and actually show us the baseline trends. And so at least for Nevada commercial collection data, regardless of how much effort's put into it, among the top 15 species that are being collected, we are seeing declines that are very obvious
but
when you look at those data.
Question on those declines, are the is that anecdotal decline, or is it is there any research backing that up?
So there is research, and that's exactly why, you know,
we have to sort of walk a fine line between presenting anecdotal data and presenting research. And so, like I mentioned, we've started to collaborate with researchers at UNR in the biology department who have been able to take this data set and start to look at it where they can control for a lot of these other factors like amount of time put into it or even the area where they're collecting. And then they can start to see statewide what the trends actually are. And so, like I mentioned, the latest data that I've seen shows a consistent decline from, I think it was about 2004 to now, in the top 15 species that have been collected commercially in the state.
So could you go to that one slide where you had those five species around the map of Nevada?
Let's see. And I know which one you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah. And the horned lizard was in the upper right-hand corner right there.
Yeah.
You had it. Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
So you showed that the horned, well, you showed significant collection in eastern Churchill, basically east of Hawthorne to east of Fallon. So that must be one collector who lives out in that area. But you showed it where you were collecting in a very specific band, and it looked like about a 100-mile long band by about 50 miles wide. And so you know that slide. What I'm wondering is what horned toad populations or horned lizard populations are within that area of collection versus outside that area of collection.
That would be wonderful data to have. It's just not something that we do have.
Okay.
And I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that, you know, our agency has one herpetologist and seven other non-game biologists who cover the whole state, and that's all non-game species. And so there just aren't enough hands on deck.
Sure. Hopefully UNR is trailing along behind you in that research partnership you're talking about.
And that's
about.
One of the things we've really tried to do is pull in grant money so that we can collaborate with researchers at UNR. And we've done that on a number of other species. And so should the need be there for the commission to see a 10-year research study before they make a decision, I think, you know, that's something we would certainly pursue with collaborators. But I think the workload is such that we don't have great data on every single reptile species that's being collected.
Sure.
Yeah.
And let's just stick with the horned lizard for a second. We talked about how many were harvested in that period. I think the number was in...
Yeah, it was 105,093 in the 30 years. I apologize. 105,093.
Right. It's a large number.
Yeah.
And horned toads, they got to be worth at least a dollar in a pet store, I would assume.
Oh, more than that.
More.
Yeah.
So $5 to $10? $20 to $50?
Yeah.
$20 to $50?
I can answer it in a second, but continue with your thought.
So its retail value is somewhere in the neighborhood of, that would be about $2 million to $5 million.
Correct.
Over that period of time.
Correct.
That's very significant.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing is, and I'll turn it over to somebody else here, but... I would personally tend to support a reduction or a cap on commercial harvesting until we actually have some of that harder data that would be, here's what's happening to horned toads outside of that area, and here's what's happening to horned lizards inside that area. That's just me personally.
Yeah, and that's definitely a very fine way to design a research study would be to study impacts inside and outside. But like I was suggesting earlier, you know, the limitations that we're working with, what we really end up doing is analyzing the self-reported commercial collection data, which
right.
is significant in and of itself. It obviously doesn't get at areas outside of those collection areas, but it gives you trends over time.
And so we've actually been able to identify declining numbers of catch, even though they're basically either putting in the same amount of effort in those areas, or we've statistically corrected for the amount of effort, and we're seeing declines in areas where they're working.
Excuse me.
Thank you for your good questions. I appreciate it. And I apologize, I am not the one to be able to answer all of those.
And I'm sorry, one last question. Non-commercial collection, I know it occurs. I have grandsons. Just letting you know.
Yeah, well, you know, hobby collection would not be affected by this.
I know it wouldn't
be
affected, yeah. But do you have any idea how large hobby collection is?
I think it's impossible to really know.
Right.
You know, I think our herpetologist himself probably formed his love of reptiles by catching them in his backyard, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's not unique to,
my
to biologists or regular, you know, anybody else in the society, I think. Yeah, we all love to get out there and explore. So I don't know that we could ever really know what the impacts are for that. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Green.
Yeah, I have one quick question, or maybe it might even be a statement. Keeping statistics on these outside of those ranges, a lot of that land is bombing range and government range and stuff. Is it even possible, if we have the herpetologists, to figure that out when it's restricted areas, even though there's a lot of lizards out there, but we're not going to drive around in a truck while they're bombing.
Right, yeah. I know DOD does employ biologists, but I'm not sure how much reptile work gets done. But our biologist does not do work, as far as I know, on those DOD lands.
Any further questions?
Yes. What I'm hearing is that we've got an awful lot of data to gather before we can just clearly go out and say, ban it, and take all those families that we saw at the meeting. They're three generations of people who grew up collecting reptiles. Obviously, they make their living on it. I'm more in favor at this point, if the department wants to do something, you know, is I think what Member Martin was saying is, you know, I'd go for a limitation, because you haven't correlated weather data, temperature fluctuations, and all these other variables that may have impacted the population growth or a loss, in addition to what the collectors are doing. The collectors have been, I think, fairly honest with sending in the reports of what they collected, where they collected. They followed the rules. Now, there's a lot of people out there who don't buy a license, are out there collecting. It's got to happen, mainly because NDAL has never, you know, authorized a whole bunch of time for their game wardens to go out there and look and see what these reptiles, and they admitted that at the meeting. It isn't high priority when you're only collecting $250 from eight people. That doesn't pay the gas to get from one town to another.
You're right about that.
So I think there's a lot that we need to examine, a lot of data that we have to collect to be fair. I mean, yes, none of the other states around us allow it at all. So maybe, you know, maybe we have a lot. We have eight registered ones, licensed ones, and we don't know how many unlicensed ones we have.
Also, could be a problem.
That there's another problem I don't know how to resolve at this point without a lot more enforcement, and that costs money, and we don't have the manpower or the money to do it. So I'm going to side with Member Martin that I think maybe if we're going to do something, if we're going to do anything. And maybe we shouldn't do anything until we have a lot more data to base whatever we do on. I would vote for a limitation rather than an out-and-out ban at this point.
Okay. So any other further discussion? Okay. So with that, we'll take public comment at this time. Any public comment? We will limit you to 3 minutes.
What's sooner than that? For the record, C.K. Bailey. Okay, what this sounds like is I'm in favor of insects, reptiles, what reptiles prey upon. what this sounds like to me is almost like a hunting season. It's almost like deer hunting, whereby you have, I'd be in favor of part two, number two of this, and not number one, an all-out ban, as I don't find that to be helpful at all. Annual and daily limits are good. Special restrictions, great. With science in mind, with somebody of authority that can make the science and that it is agreed upon by a group, just like what is the biologist for deer, elk herds, and like that. It's very reminiscent of what I'm hearing here for reptiles. The collection of rattlesnakes for their venom has long been for research and for making medicines is vitally important. It's vitally important research. Now, those are not taking or killing those animals or those reptiles, but they are being taken out, and they're being used for something very specific and something very good. And lastly, I'm uncertain how those who take reptiles can help mitigate or pay for helping the rehab, if it's possible, of reptile populations, just like what we do with deer populations or antelope populations, bighorn sheep. I mean, what I'm seeing here is a very big deal, and I'm taking it very seriously. And if you're going to take it seriously, there has to be some conservation on the other side of it. But that doesn't mean banning it, okay? It means that those who stand to gain from taking reptiles need to put back in. Thank you.
Any other further public comment? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the further public comment? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. Any further discussion? The only thing I will add is that, I'm torn on this. I got to be honest with you. I feel like anything that is commercially done to derive from income where there's no resources coming back to help with habitat improvement, with species management, all of those things that we need, right, to continue to keep an ecosystem alive, right? I struggle with the fact of anybody taking a resource that's a resource of all of ours, right, and commercially benefiting from it without giving back. I struggle with that. And so, from a conservation standpoint, I'm torn between a complete ban on all commercial collection and having this regulation. And I agree with my colleagues that are sitting next to me that certainly, and I'm a small business owner, so I can honestly say that I understand the small business impact, and I'm very, very much aware of that. But the impact that I think is for small businesses is so minute, given the big picture here, right? This resource, this huge resource that is of such value, I struggle with that. And so I am in favor, at the very least, of making some regulations, having limits, all that stuff. I got to be honest with you. I think that as you guys go forward and develop your research, I will probably, I can't say that for sure, but I would probably be in favor of a complete commercial ban on this natural resource. So with that, I'll call for a motion.
I'd like to make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that the Carson Advisory Board recommend to the commission to institute the second one, which would involve putting a limit, a temporary limit, on the collection until more data is collected and they can make, a decision based on science.
Okay, so we would be in favor of option number two of what he put, which is really option four on the commission agenda. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I second that.
So motion by Mr. Yannick, seconded by Mr. Green. All those, any further discussion?
Yeah, I have a question before I vote. On page three of the recommendations that you prepared, you have the quotas. Could you go back on your slides to what the harvest was on some of these species, or do you know them? For example, you're proposing 50 annually of let's pick one, western fence lizard. What is the current reported annual harvest of western fence lizard? Because 50 seems like such a small number for such a very common lizard.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have annual numbers with me. What I presented
was, I know, but that was how many years of data?
30.
30?
Yeah.
So you can take that number and at least divide it by 30 and at least get an average annual, right?
Yeah.
That's how I used to do averages.
Yeah. So I think there was one slide, well, this slide here in particular.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, if you were to divide 40,000 by 30, you...
Right, that comes out to be about 1,000, about...
Be much higher
1,200 per year. Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's on the low end for...
Right.
Well, I guess chuck holes.
And when you look at your fluctuations, that's going anywhere from maybe 300 to 5,000 a year. Okay.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I just wanted that clarification before we vote on that.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so we have a motion on the floor, seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any nays?
I oppose.
I am going to oppose as well.
So it does not carry. Looking for another motion?
Yeah, I'd like it. Yeah, I guess so.
I would like to make a motion that the Carson City Wildlife Advisory Board advise the commission that while we support management of reptiles and commercial harvesting of reptiles, that at this particular junction, the Carson City Wildlife Advisory Board does not support commercial regulation. That's the motion.
I'll second that.
Member Martin made the motion. Member Yannick seconded. Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 I'm going to have to nay on that.
I'm a nay also.
All right, so how about this? I'd like to make a motion that that we, very similar to what Mr. Yannick's motion was with regard to option number four, following that model, and that be a temporary solution to what data you guys have collected and the concerns that you have, that we support the commission in doing that.
What are you talking about? What's option number four?
I'm sorry, option number two. I apologize. It's for the commission asked the group to come back with a presentation on option number two and option number four. Okay, so I'm referring to on the commission agenda, which is option number four. With me?
That's a limitation.
That's a limitation where we're developing regulation and yes, in a sense, quota limits, right? I think the difference is that you had wanted it as a permanent thing, right? And I'm saying that's a temporary thing. So let's discuss it because we're pressed for time here.
Could you just...
We have 5 minutes.
Got it. Could you restate your motion, please?
So my motion is that we go with option number two, which was presented here at this meeting, which equates out to option number four that the commission has asked the department to come back with, right? But from a temporary standpoint versus a permanent standpoint, which is what I understood Mr. Yannick's motion to be. So everything's the same, but from a temporary standpoint versus until we can collect data and do the research that's needed to either come up with permanent regulation or a ban completely, right? Or nothing at all. My understanding, based on your...
So, I believe that option number... I'm the one who confused the numbers here, but the option to ban could be a permanent ban or a temporary ban. And then the option to regulate... David, do you know if there's any specification on whether that has to be permanent or whether it could be temporary?
No.
I didn't read anything to that effect, so...
It doesn't say, it doesn't state.
The only thing that mentioned permanent or temporary options was the ban.
Okay, maybe my misunderstanding there. So then I'll go back to Mr. Yannick's motion and make it again. We'll do that, okay? And I will be in support of that. Okay, so all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Point of protocol, please. Point of protocol or order here. I do believe that particular motion was already acted on, and it was not voted on. It was not carried. So I'm just going to suggest that you make a motion again.
Which is what I'm doing.
Okay. So you're making the motion of what Gil's original motion was.
Correct.
And with the clarification. I'm wondering if we have a second on that motion then.
I'll second it. Okay, so made by me, seconded by Mr. Green. All those in favor signify by saying aye, aye,
aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Opposed.
Make it note that Mr. Martin opposed. Okay, carrying on, just to finish up our agenda here. But I apologize to everybody for being late here. We do need to take a motion real quick on the item that you pulled out, Mr. Yannick.
We already voted on item 8A, Mr. Chairman. Yes, okay. And you voted in favor of it.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so agenda item number 9 was any non-regulatory agenda items as part of the commission agenda. Are there any? Okay, seeing none, we'll continue on. Agenda item number 10 is a discussion of possible action regarding commitments to... the Las Vegas Commission meeting here this upcoming weekend. I believe, Mr. Yannick, you are committed to that, correct?
Yes.
So we'll move on from there. Agenda item number 11 is our next board meeting, which is scheduled for October 30th, Monday, October 30th. Is there any conflicts or anything? Are we good with that? I will not be in attendance to that, so Member Martin, you will have to do that. I'll be... on vacation that week. And any further public comment at this time? Seeing none, we'll call for a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Okay, seconded by Mr. Green. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.